from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. U.S. Senator Rick Santorum freaked out an Associated Press reporter recently when he equated homosexual sex with incest, polygamy, bigamy, and adultery, and leapt from gay sex to man-dog sex in a recent interview about a Texas sodomy case now before the U.S. Supreme Court. Pennsylvania Republicans said the government is right to limit individuals' wants and passion. Gay advocacy groups, some Democrats, and a handful of Republicans are calling on Santorum to step down from his Republican leadership position. But the White House has been nearly silent, and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is standing by Santorum as a voice for inclusion. Tonight on Point, the Republican Party and homosexuality zipping up the big tent. We begin with a step-back look at the Santorum controversy. Hendrik Hertzberg is senior editor at the New Yorker magazine. In this week's issue, he writes about the Santorum incident in an article entitled "The Senate's Anti-Gay Blade." I asked how he interpreted the public comments Bill Frist and other GOP power brokers have made about Senator Santorum.
Well, it's interesting that Frist chose to defend the man and not what he said. That's often a sign that something's fishy and wrong somewhere. When somebody makes an obviously bigoted comment and then you say, well, I know in my heart that this person is not a bigot, but you don't come to grips with what they actually said. And that's what Frist did here.
Rick Santorum is, as you point out, number three in the Republican leadership, just behind Bill Frist and the Assistant Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. What do you make of the fact that such a high-ranking Republican is prepared to come out with remarks so offensive to homosexuals? Is this a political advantage for the Republican Party, for Rick Santorum?
Well, I don't think this was planned. I don't think this was a canny political move on Santorum's part. But there certainly is political advantage for the Republicans in having a high-ranking Republican make a comment like this, and then to have other Republicans sort of gingerly distance themselves from it. It does send a message to the Christian right especially, and to homophobes in general, that their spiritual home is in the Republican Party. The cost is, of course, that it sends the opposite message to the gay community and all their friends and relations, which is also a pretty sizable group.
How do you see these comments falling in the party lineage of Ronald Reagan and Barry Goldwater? What would those kind of granite-faced Republicans have thought of Rick Santorum's statement?
I don't think they would have much liked it. I mean, the Republican Party has kind of solidified and ossified in this department. Reagan was what I call a closet tolerant. He was kind of quasi-secretly tolerant of homosexuals. He was, after all, from Hollywood, and Nancy Reagan had flagrantly gay walkers who would take her to parties and stuff. And Reagan himself, one of his first political moves was to oppose a referendum in California that would have forbidden gays from teaching in the California public schools. He squelched that referendum himself, and that put the kibosh on gay baiting, at least in the California conservative movement, for several years. Barry Goldwater, especially late in his life, became kind of notoriously tolerant. He said, I don't care if they're gay as long as they think straight. But he was rather strongly in favor of gay rights.
What does this suggest to you about in the GOP, there are sort of libertarian traditions and more authoritarian traditions. What does the Santorum week on homosexuality say to you?
It really says something about the constituency politics of the Republican Party. There is a strong homophobic constituency there, and there are plenty of people in the Republican Party who are anything but homophobic, and I very much doubt whether President Bush himself has any prejudice against homosexuals. But this is the game they're playing, and until the time comes when they pay a substantial political cost for playing footsie with homophobia, it's just going to keep on going on.
Now, Santorum drew a link between bigamy and polygamy and homosexuality. Pick that apart for us. Does that hold up in your mind?
Not in my mind, because bigamy and polygamy are not matters of private consensual sex. They have to do with something public, which is the institution of marriage and the contract aspects of marriage. Marriage is a public institution as well as a private one. So the two really don't have anything to do with each other. In fact, gays, on the whole, would like to see marriage extended to them so that they could partake in this particular institution.
And I wonder also what you think of this coming up in an interview with a senator. This was an Associated Press reporter doing a longer profile, among other things, on Rick Santorum. And in that context, here's the senator talking about man-on-child sexuality, man-on-dog sexuality. The reporter actually stopped and said, "Senator, you're freaking me out." But Santorum stayed in this vein. How do you interpret that? Where does this come from?
Well, that was one of the most hilarious aspects of this exchange. And the Associated Press, after their original story ran, they actually put onto the internet part of the transcript of this tape-recorded interview. And in my article in The New Yorker, I published a pretty long excerpt from it because it just shows the quality of reasoning here. And this young woman who was interviewing Santorum says, you know, she does say, she says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't think I was going to talk about man-on-dog with the United States senator. It's sort of freaking me out." It's something a comedy writer would have hesitated before daring to write.
And yet this was a United States senator, a high-ranking one, and he, without any prompting, took himself into this turf. Does that mean that this is the kind of normal substance, texture of Rick Santorum's private conversations that became public here? Is this a standard part of GOP rhetoric under the tent?
I don't think it's a standard part of it. I think it represents something that's out on one edge, but that is definitely within the aura of GOP respectability. And Santorum was not making fun of gays or making overtly hostile remarks, but the views, the underlying views that he was expressing are, well, you would have to regard them as bigoted from a certain point of view. A lot of people have said, well, this is standard Orthodox Catholic doctrine, but there's a tremendous range of opinion in the Catholic Church about these matters. This is not an automatic Catholic point of view. But it's certainly within the aura of Republican respectability, but it would not go anywhere in the Democratic Party.
Rick Hertzberg, you know, of course, we all remember Trent Lott just a few months ago made remarks of his own that suggested underlying views that many read as biased or bigoted toward African Americans. He was ridden out of his leadership position in the party. Nothing of the kind has happened here. What's the difference?
I think that if the same thing happened 10 years from now, then Santorum would have been ridden out of his leadership position. There has been progress, certainly. And the very fact that the defenders of Santorum have had to defend him in slightly apologetic terms, well, you can view that as a sign of some sort of progress. But again, what Trent Lott had to say was something for which it quickly became clear George Bush and the Republican Party would have to pay a substantial political price if they did not get rid of it. And that isn't yet the case with homophobia, but that's the direction we're moving in, and eventually we'll get there.
Rick Hertzberg, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hendrik Hertzberg is senior editor at The New Yorker magazine. He spoke with me from New York. Homosexuals and the Republican Party are not a marriage made in easy politics. The GOP, for all its talk of compassionate conservatism, must still answer to the religious right, and that doesn't sit well with gays who want a place in the Republican big tent and at the political table. The Santorum controversy has deepened the rift and the political divide. What did you hear in the remarks of Senator Rick Santorum? Should he step down from his leadership position in the Republican Party or be praised for supporting family values? Why does the Republican Party care so much about what happens between consenting adults behind closed doors? And should they? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Patrick Guerrero, Executive Director of Log Cabin Republicans, a group which serves to educate Republicans about gay and lesbian issues and gays about the Republican Party. Good evening and welcome, Patrick Guerrero.
Great to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So, Patrick, you have no doubt been following Rick Santorum's comments. I'm sure the ripples through the Log Cabin group have been large. How do you interpret what happened when this very prominent, up-and-coming U.S. senator from Pennsylvania sat down with the Associated Press and suddenly got into these brambles? What went on here?
Well, it was certainly terribly disappointing from our perspective. We've always known that we had disagreements with Rick Santorum on some social issues, but in working with him, we found him to be a man who was open to discussion and dialogue. And I think the underlying views of his remarks, his choice of words, and probably most importantly, his failure to recognize that he had hurt a part of the American family and couldn't quite get himself to at least acknowledge that and apologize in some way, we think was a real mistake, and threw some acid onto the wounds that had largely been healed over the last 2 years under President Bush.
How much of the Republican Party, Patrick Guerrero, do the views that Rick Santorum conveyed here represent?
I'm sure that there's a solid percentage, and you could say 25%, 30%. It's actually one of the reasons why log cabin Republicans exist. Your previous guest had noted that it was 25 years ago that log cabin Republicans were founded because of the effort to get Ronald Reagan to come out against the California initiative that would have banned gays and lesbians from teaching. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've been committed to building a GOP that is more understanding and inclusive in approach. Rick Santorum took us many steps backwards just by this remark. And there are a lot of folks in this country who happen to be conservative, happen to be Republican, pay taxes, follow the laws, are God-fearing, and also happen to be gay and lesbian. And he did a great disservice to himself, to the Republican Party, and to the work that we do every day.
What does it say about the direction of the Republican Party, the direction in which it's going, that Rick Santorum, who is the number three man in the Republican leadership, he's a chairman of the Senate Republican Conference, he's right behind Mitch McConnell and Bill Frist. What does it say about the dynamic direction in which this party is going that such an up-and-comer would make these remarks in April of 2003?
It's truly unwise. I'm sure some of the most angry people right now, outside of folks who really believe in fairness for all Americans, are the White House and political folks who recognize that this is opening up wounds that only help the Republican Party lose votes. When Republicans campaign on these issues, and I can think of three recent presidential candidates, Pat Buchanan, Gary Bauer, and Pat Robinson, who gained a total of zero electoral college votes. When we campaign around these issues, we divide conservatives, divide Republicans, and lose elections. And my guess is that Rick Santorum has learned a lesson here, and that the Republican Party, as it prepares a plan on how to win in 2004, would rather be talking about the war on terror than reigniting the cultural wars in America.
Why do you think Rick Santorum has learned a lesson? He was praised by a majority leader, Bill Frist, as a man of tremendous integrity, deep faith, someone who believes all men are created equal, a real voice for inclusion. That doesn't sound like a woodshed trip.
I think in most of the remarks I have heard, his Senate colleagues have defended him as a human being and as a man, and very few, if any, that I have seen have defended what he said or said that they agreed with what he said.
Rick is a consistent voice for inclusion and compassion in the Republican Party and in the Senate. This from Bill Frist, head of the Senate Republican.
Yeah, you know, and I probably could have been quoted as saying something quite similar up until this week. While we have our disagreements, he has someone who is he has been inclusive and included us in a dialogue with him, even when we firmly disagreed with him around issues. And so I think there was the Senate collegiality being shown here. The White House lent a voice in the same. We wish both Bill Frist and the White House had come out and distanced themselves very directly from his remarks and noted that all Americans are a part of the American family, including gay and lesbian Americans.
The president said to Ari Fleischer, the president believes the senator is an inclusive man, and that's what he believes.
And his remarks were not inclusive, and we called on the White House to be more forceful. We wish they had taken the extra step of not only not saying they agreed with his sentiments, but also noted that the Republican Party was a welcome place for all Americans. You know, President Bush has been, while we don't agree with him every single day, has been very disciplined since he met with a group of gay and lesbian Republicans in Austin, Texas, during his campaign. And we came out of that meeting, he said he was a better man for it. In his appointment of people, regardless of sexual orientation, in his invitation to log cabin Republicans to attend some of the most important meetings happening in Washington, D.C. regarding global AIDS and tax policy and foreign policy, judicial nominations. He's reached out to us.
All had your confidence going, right? And then this Patrick Guerrero, Executive Director, Log Cabin Republicans, please stand by. We're talking about Republicans and homosexuality tonight. Trent Lott resigned his leadership post after insulting African-Americans. Should Rick Santorum do the same? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Republicans and homosexuality in the wake of remarks by U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, Republican Rick Santorum. What do you think? What did you hear in the remarks of Senator Santorum? Homophobia? Family values? Government in the bedroom? Government where it ought to be? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Patrick Guerrero, joining us from Washington. He's executive director of Log Cabin Republicans, a group that represents the interest and voice of gay Americans in the Republican Party. We're joined now also from Washington by Ken O'Connor, president of the Family Research Council, a conservative advocacy group that has come out in support of Senator Rick Santorum. Good evening and welcome, Ken O'Connor.
Good evening. Thank you. And it's Connor, not O'Connor.
Pardon me. I'm reading it one way and saying it another. But it's good to have you, Ken Connor. Ken, you have no doubt heard and scrutinized Rick Santorum's remarks. They were clearly focused around issues of privacy and the courts, but the context was had a lot to do with homosexuality and his clear disapproval, as he said, not of homosexuals, but of homosexual acts. What does your group make of that distinction? What does your group make of Senator Santorum's comments?
Well, first of all, I think the distinction is important. I think it's important to understand that we can value a person while we decry or are dismayed about their behavior. The mere fact that people engage in behaviors that we don't agree with doesn't mean they don't have value. And I think that, or that they don't have dignity. And I think that's the point that Senator Santorum sought to make. Also, I think what he was doing was really extending the logic that was advocated on behalf of the claimants in the Lawrence versus Texas sodomy case and which has been advocated by the Human Rights Campaign, which is to the effect that if the sole test under the right to privacy is whether or not adults are engaged in consensual sex in a private setting, and that's determinative of the case in terms of the permissibility of those behaviors, then the effect of that, when you extend the logic, will be that the state will have no interest or ability in being able to regulate bigamy, polygamy, incest, and the like. And that's absolutely true. If you think about it, for example, an adult brother and sister who choose to have sex together, should the state have an interest in that? What are the implications for the child who may be the product of a conception of the union of those two? Should a mother and an adult son be able to engage in sexual relationships as long as they consent? Would the state be foreclosed from regulating in that area?
But Ken O'Connor, I wonder, after all the conversation this country has had about homosexuality over the last 10, 20, 30 years, are you still comfortable sitting here tonight as head of an organization very powerful within the Republican Party, at some level equating incest and homosexuality? Is there not a distinction here?
He wasn't equating the two. What he recognized is that ideas have consequences and that cases have precedential value for other cases. He was extending the logic. And, in fact, I would point out that essentially what he was doing was paraphrasing the very language of the opinion in the decision of Bowers versus Hardwick, which was written by Justice White. Justice White was hardly a right-wing ideologue. He was appointed to the court by President Kennedy. And he himself raised these very issues in his opinion when the case of Bowers v. Hardwick was decided. That was the case in 1986.
But Ken Connor, you know, bigamy, polygamy, and incest are all illegal. Homosexuality is not.
Homosexual behavior, homosexual sodomy in the state of Texas is illegal. And that's what this trial was all about in the lower court, and that's what the appeal was all about. Now, whether or not it's whose role it is to repeal the Texas sodomy statute, whether it's the legislature of the state of Texas or the Supreme Court of the United States, is an important issue. And I think that's part of what Rick Santorum was also addressing inherent in those remarks that he was offering.
Mm. Ken Connor, please stand by. Patrick Guerrero, there's so much to pick up here, and I want to bring Ken Connor back in just a second. But I guess, first of all, is this, and we understand the distinction that Ken Connor's making here, that Rick Santorum attempted to make in his remarks. He was saying, don't disparage or the homosexual. Don't throw that person outside society's embrace. But don't countenance gay sex, sexual activity. At that point, Ken Connor and Rick Santorum throw all this into the same neighborhood as bigamy, polygamy, and incest and adultery in Santorum's case. What do you make of that logic, Patrick Guerrero?
Well, it explains why there are millions of gay and lesbian Americans and their families and their friends and their coworkers and their the folks that they go to their church, mosque, or synagogue with, who are outraged with the choice of words in the unfortunate analogy, suggesting that two consensual adults in the privacy of their own home should have laws on the books in any state in the nation that make that criminal activity, is un-American, it's not conservative, and to compare ending that type of law with incest and public displays of a different form of marriage, like bigamy or polygamy, mm-hmm. which are illegal, is inconsistent. And one thing that I've reminded Senator Santorum about is that the state of Pennsylvania was one of the first states that put an end to the un-American sodomy laws that existed in Pennsylvania, and it's had about 20 years to experiment with overturning it. Mm. There has not been a spike in incest, polygamy, bestiality, or other indicators that he suggested in his remarks. It's really out of the mainstream. 37 states in the nation have already done this, and I think Senator Santorum knows, and the far right knows, that the court is most likely about to declare that it's unconstitutional in America, and they're preparing for that this summer.
But Patrick Guerrero, you know that Ken Connor represents a very significant constituency within the Republican Party. As you listen to him portray the legal issues, the constitutional issues in his mind in this way, how do you feel as a fellow Republican?
Well, I actually believe Ken and his organization and ours can find common ground on some things. I do get offended when the Family Research Council or other organizations equate individuals' sexual orientation with the downfall of the American family or a threat to marriage or a threat to the safety of our school system. I think those are unfortunate things. I spend my days doing my best to make sure that all Americans, when they wake up and go to work and pay taxes, are treated equally. There's no other agenda. There's no desire for special rights or special recognition. It's a very basic thing. And I believe all of us are a part of the American family, and that there are some issues that Ken and the Family Research Council and even log cabin Republicans can actually agree on moving forward.
Ken Connor, is there room in the Republican Party for practicing homosexuals, homosexuals who are not homosexual in label only, but actually have homosexual relationships?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand that the Republican Party doesn't use sexual orientation as a litmus test for becoming a Republican.
But I'm not talking about orientation, but rather activity.
The Republican Party does make a very strong stand in its platform as it relates to homosexual marriage and heterosexual marriage. Remember that part of the goal of the Human Rights Campaign and the Log Cabin Republicans is to extend the marriage covenant to homosexual couples. That's a big part of the homosexual agenda. Now, the Republican Party stands four square against that. The Republican Party has said, look, we support heterosexual, not homosexual marriage. We're opposed to using tax dollars to fund benefits for domestic partners and homosexual couples. We're opposed to penalizing and criminalizing thought through various kinds of hate crimes. And in the final analysis, the issue really is not one of tolerance or inclusion, but I think it's naive to suggest that you can bring into the party people whose positions are diametrically opposed to the statements contained in the platform without materially changing the party.
So should the log cabin Republicans leave the party?
Well, I'm just saying that their position as it relates to homosexual marriage is inconsistent with the party platform.
Does that mean they should leave?
I do think it's important to also understand, as a matter of policy, that one can oppose these behaviors on pure public health grounds alone. We know, for example, that over half the AIDS cases in America are attributed to the transmission through homosexual sodomy. In 1997, the Journal of Epidemiology, in a study, showed that gay men in Canada have a lifespan of 8 to 20 years shorter than heterosexuals. We've lost over 500,000 people in this country because of the AIDS virus. It's cost the taxpayers billions of dollars. I think you can oppose these behaviors simply out of concern for the people who may be engaged in them, and because of the innocent people who may be adversely affected by them.
Patrick Guerrero, by that analysis, can gay Republicans who have active sex lives stay in this party, or should they leave?
I disagree with Ken in that I think there's room for both practicing heterosexuals and practicing homosexuals in the Republican Party. There are a lot of lines of agreement: tax policy, foreign policy, public safety, accountability in our schools. The Republican Party has some growing to do, and I would bet that if we had this conversation a decade from now, that we would be talking about a very different set of platform planks. There's room in our party for people who have differences of opinion. And second, when it comes to HIV/AIDS, this disease, unfortunately, does not discriminate against people because of sexual orientation. Ken is very aware that in the world that we live in today, a universal one, the vast majority of people with HIV/AIDS happen to be men and women, many of them in the continent of Africa, many in China. This is not a disease based on sexual orientation. In the United States, gay Americans were on the front lines of this disease, and it's a very sad thing. But to use it as some example of why we should accept that there be laws on the books criminalizing adult private behavior that's consensual, or that it's reason to tell gay and lesbian Americans they're okay as long as they do not act out on their sexual orientation.
But Tom, when private
out of the mainstream, and it's not accepted by the majority of Americans. And,
but it's coming from Rick Santorum. It's coming tonight from Ken Connor. You sound incredibly measured there, Patrick Guerrero. Ken Connor, I hear you there.
Yes, Tom. I would make this observation very simply: that when private acts have adverse public health consequences, the state has an interest in addressing those behaviors. In a day and age when the state, in the interest of public health, regulates everything from cigarette smoking to bungee jumping, it's facetious to suggest that it doesn't have an interest in regulating high-risk sexual behaviors that endanger the lives of millions of people and cost the taxpayer billions of dollars.
We've got the perspective, Ken Connor, and what a chasm we hear in this conversation between two Republicans tonight. Patrick Guerrero, Ken Connor, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Stanley Kurtz. He's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University and a contributing editor at the National Review Online. Good evening and welcome, Stanley Kurtz.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Stanley Kurtz, what's your assessment of the political fallout from Rick Santorum's statements and the Republican position on homosexuals and homosexuality? Will it help or hurt in the 2004 presidential campaign?
Well, I think the Republican position on homosexuality is complex. I was struck by the fact during this controversy that the people at National Review, most of the ones who spoke out, said that they were personally against sodomy laws. George Will, I noticed the other day on the Sunday morning news show, said that he was against sodomy laws. I think that's quite a common position, actually, among many conservatives. So I don't think the Republican Party has a clear position against sodomy laws.
But here you've got a very top official in the party making these statements, drawing these broad equations, and the party continuing to embrace him as a voice of inclusion. I guess that the bottom line still stands. You can hear the kind of a position here that many homosexuals will find very difficult to deal with. But does it, in fact, end up helping the Republican Party because there's resonance with a kind of anti-homosexual constituency within its ranks within the country?
Well, it's a complicated question. There's a short-term answer, and then there's an answer in the medium term. The short-term answer is that it does hurt the Republican Party, although not, I think, all that much. Now, the reason it hurts the Republican Party is because the country is divided essentially into three groups. There are social liberals on the one hand, social conservatives on the other, and then there are social moderates who hold that critical balance of power in the middle. Now, the social moderates are divided within themselves. On the one hand, they don't want to see sodomy laws. They don't want to see government regulation of private sexual behavior for the most part. But on the other hand, say an innovation like gay marriage is something that they would worry about. They would be concerned about the impact of that on the institution of marriage. Now, in the short term, those social moderates are indeed going to be thinking about the Republican Party. Maybe this party is just a little bit more conservative on social issues than we are. But the interesting thing is, what will happen in three or four months from now if the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts legalizes gay marriage? Mm-hmm. That is really going to have a dramatic impact on this entire issue.
How so?
Well, because there are a lot of complicated constitutional arguments and questions, and once gay marriage is legalized in even a single American state, you're going to see two movements growing up simultaneously. On the one hand, a lot of gay couples are going to come into Massachusetts and get married. And then they're going to go back to their states, and they're going to initiate lawsuits trying to get those states to recognize their marriages. And they're going to appeal to different sort of constitutional grounds, equal protection grounds, full faith and credit grounds. And so that's going to be going on the one hand. And it's going to really bring a sensation of publicity and to the whole country. And then at the same time, social conservatives are going to be pushing for an amendment to the Constitution of the United States that declares that marriage is a union of a single man and a single woman.
So do you imagine in the presidential campaign 2004, the Democrats welded to support of gay marriage and the Republicans firm in opposition to it?
I do, and I think that at that point, the social moderates are going to be a little bit more concerned about the Democrats than about the Republicans. And while they don't agree with Rick Santorum's position retrospectively, that will either become unimportant or simply one of many symbols of the fact that the Republicans don't go along with gay marriage.
So it sounds like a net positive by the time the big balloting comes around, in your mind.
Right, not because of what Santorum has said so much. There will be some retrospective, you know, effect from that. But I just think that the gay marriage battle itself is going to swamp all of these smaller questions.
Patrick Guerrero?
Well, all you have to do is look at the 2000 election to recognize that the Bush victory, and some claim it wasn't one, we claim it was one, was fragile. And the extent to which comments made by Senator Santorum or Senator Lott before him take a piece of the American family and make them less inclined to vote on the Republican side is a problem. And it's a problem when you look at the Electoral College vote. And so our suggestion to our friends on the Republican side is the far right is not going to vote for Howard Dean or John Kerry of Massachusetts or wherever the nominee is. The folks in the middle, the fair-minded thinkers in America who are both gay and straight, want a president who believes everyone is a part of the American family. And when the party moves away from that position, it loses elections. And it is how we ended up losing the White House in 1992 and taking 8 years to
get there. We shall see. Stanley Kurtz, I know I have to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Stanley Kurtz is with the National Review Online. We're talking about Republicans and homosexuality. Is the Republican coolness to gays a political advantage? Is the Democrats welcome that a political liability? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Republicans and homosexuality. U.S. Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania has made remarks recently linking homosexual activity with bigamy, polygamy, incest, adultery. What do you think? Why does the GOP care so much about what happens in people's bedrooms between consenting adults? Is this a GOP authoritarian impulse driving out a GOP libertarian impulse? Is Rick Santorum just standing up for what's right? Or is he slandering millions of Americans? When Rick Santorum links homosexuality with man-on-dog sexuality, is it time for him to go or stay? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Frank is calling from Natick, Massachusetts. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Initially, I just wanted to tell you, and maybe a lot of your listeners have the same sort of reaction I do, and maybe it's because we're from Massachusetts and we come from an enlightened, or hopefully a more enlightened place than the state of Texas. And listening to Mr. Connor there, it's very clear to me that we are more enlightened. But initially, I was outraged by Santorum's remarks. And I thought long and hard of it because it really struck at the core of what I think a lot of individuals, especially those around me, believe about individual rights and the sanctity of privacy over this so-called hypocritical moral code that the I call them the American Taliban. That's really what they are. They're trying to legislate every single aspect of life and put it into a category, turning the clock back to the 1950s.
Frank, if I may ask, what's your political affiliation?
Well, I was a Republican, and I have to share with you, I shared it with your production assistant there, that Santorum, I really have to thank Rick Santorum. I've been sort of back and forth and back and forth with regard to my political affiliation. And Santorum's remark really pushed me over the edge. There's no place for level-headed thinkers, and I'm not gay, and I'm not gay sympathetic in the sense that, you know, I think that all gay rights should be acceded to immediately. But I do feel that there are human rights, and they have nothing to do with who you go to bed with. Mm. And so I've decided to leave the Republican Party.
Frank, stand by. I want to bring Ken Connor in to respond here. Ken Connor, our caller, Frank, describes the Christian right in the Republican Party as the American Taliban. Is this taking things too far?
I don't think that kind of name-calling really fosters the debate. It doesn't shed much light on it. It certainly helps generate some heat. And I think it reflects a difficulty that many of that point of view have in crediting people whose views differ from their own with good faith and reasoned judgment. We ought to be able to have a debate in this country about homosexual behaviors, about homosexual marriage, about domestic partner benefits. That is a thoughtful, sensitive, reasoned debate without resorting to name-calling.
Well, if you take away the label there, if I may interpret, I think Frank is saying this is a religious agenda getting too deep into American politics. What do you think of that?
You don't have to be a religious person to be concerned about the public health consequences of homosexual sodomy. As I mentioned before, well over half of the cases of AIDS transmission occur through homosexual sodomy. You don't have to be a religious person to be concerned about that.
Frank, let me bring you back in here. Ken Connors,
this is a public health issue. Yeah, Tom, he's being totally disingenuous, and I think your other two callers hit the nail on the head. This is just some of the Christian right blather that we're accustomed to hearing all the time. They've got a certain slant. They have a political agenda and where they want to take the country. If you don't fit in with that, you are outside the mainstream, and that's where they're taking the Republican Party. And you know something? In a sense, I told you I was originally outraged.
Yes.
I think Rick Santorum has done the Republican Party a big favor because, no pun intended, he's come out of the closet and shown himself for who he really is, a narrow, bigoted, basically ultra-right individual who has no respect for the individual. Mr. Connor, I'm really tired of your harping on the health risks of that kind of behavior, because all that is a red herring. All that is dialogue to promote your own personal prejudice. And you can't tell me that you're not.
Undeniable facts, and it sounds like Frank would rather demagogue the issue than have a dialogue.
Frank, let me ask you this, if I may.
I don't want a dialogue.
Frank, hang on one second. If you're leaving this party and you're a conservative, what do you do?
Well, it's a good question. The Democratic Party here is in a kind of a similar state in a way. You've got Tommy Finneran basically whipping up everybody into shape. And,
see, you're talking Massachusetts politics here, but nationally, because we have listeners listening from all over.
It's very hard because, you know, the Democrats really don't have their act together. And I'm hoping that in the next 2 years, people like Rick Santorum will do us a favor and make us coalesce so that we can get behind somebody who stands behind
everybody. Frank, good luck wherever you end up. Thanks for calling. Charles is calling from Kingston, New Hampshire. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
I'll be up front with you all and tell you that I'm neither a Republican nor a Christian right neoconservative, but my question is for Patrick Guerrero. Is he still there?
Yes, he is.
Mr. Guerrero, the Bush administration has allied itself clearly with the extreme Christian right and the neoconservatives. To paraphrase George W. Bush and comments he made recently, it's time to put their cards on the table. Do you, Mr. Guerrero, believe that it's time for you and the Log Cabin Republicans to demand that this administration not only distanced itself from, but indeed to condemn Rick Santorum's remarks and his stance, and that if the administration will not do this, are you ready to leave Mr. Bush and his neoconservative Republican Party, and is it not time to do this now while there's still time to choose another presidential candidate for the next election?
Charles, you've got it. And Patrick Guerra, I hope you'll pick that up with all the gusto with which it's given, that question.
We have been one of the very first organizations to forcefully comment and denounce the statements by Rick Santorum. We exist as an organization because we have tremendous work to do, not only with Rick Santorum, but also with President Bush and the White House. No, we're not going to leave this party. Pat Buchanan left this party, as did other radical right conservatives, because there's, in the end, no place for bigotry within either political party or anywhere in America. And when folks like Ken have to, who see the world changing and America changing, and have to refer back to cases from 1986 that are going to be overturned, and always refer back to the fact that some men in America who happened to be gay got HIV and died of AIDS in the early stages of that disease in this country, is deeply hurtful. It angers us. It is difficult often to maintain a sense of decorum when you hear that type of language. The reality is when you have to grasp at those, what I would refer to as desperate and divisive facts that have no consistency when it comes to what we're talking about tonight.
Charles, I want to bring you back in here. That sounds like Patrick Guerra is prepared to stay on the inside of the Republican Party and represent gay interests there. Your thoughts?
Fine. How about demanding, which was my question, that Mr. Bush and his neoconservative allies there, how about demanding that they not only distance themselves from, but condemn Rick Santorum and his remarks and his stance, or else you guys are going to stay on board?
We have called on the president to do that, and all Republican leaders to do that. Some have not. We believe there is important work to do, and that by abandoning our party that we agree with on a whole set of issues and caving in to the radical right is the wrong way to go, and that history will teach the Republican Party that if it chooses to go down this ugly path of throwing acid on the wounds of the cultural wars of the past, they will lose elections, not win them. Politics is about addition, not subtraction, and the American public's position on these issues is changing dramatically over time, as more Americans have the courage and the dignity to come out to the people that they love, the people that they share their communities with, and the people they work with. And Republicans need to catch up and stop talking about the 1980s and realize where we are in the year 2003.
Charles, thanks for your call. Ken Connor, there's an assumption in this conversation that several have put forward that 10 years from now, homosexuality, including sexual activity, will be more easily embraced by the Republican Party. Do you buy that view?
No, I don't buy that view. And in fact, if you listen to Patrick, it sounds like we don't have an AIDS crisis in this country any longer, when nothing could be further from the truth.
May I ask something? Your bottom line, Ken Connor, is your bottom line public health or religious belief?
No, it's several fold. I think there are a variety of interests that are at stake here.
How important is your religious belief?
One is the defense of marriage. I'm not even addressing the religious issues.
I understand that. That's why I'm asking, because you've addressed marriage and you've addressed public health.
Public policy organization. We're addressing this matter on the basis of public policy. Now, historically, the state has regulated in these areas on a variety of grounds.
Are you willing to address the religious angle here? Is it an important angle, religious opposition to homosexuality, or not in the Republican Party?
Well, I think there are many who, on the basis of their religious beliefs, find homosexual behavior to be morally repugnant. Mm-hmm. But the issue here is whether or not it's potentially the subject of regulation on public policy grounds. And for example, historically, states have been permitted to regulate in the area of sexual behaviors in the defense of marriage, on public health grounds, and in defense of public morality.
Now, and that's where we're going to have to leave it tonight, Ken Connor. I'm sorry, but our time has run out. I appreciate your joining us tonight. Ken Connor is president of the Family Research Council, a conservative advocacy group that's come out in support of Senator Rick Santorum. Thanks for being with us. And Patrick Guerra, executive director of Log Cabin Republicans, a group that serves to educate the Republican Party on gay and lesbian issues. Thank you for being with us tonight. Listeners, you can continue the conversation on our website. Go to onepointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, actress Candace Bergen on the challenges of growing older. This is On Point. Like most children, Candace Bergen loved Walt Disney. But in her case, Walt let her ride the model train in his backyard. Born into Hollywood royalty, Bergen followed outsized role models and became her own woman. She explored photojournalism, magazine writing, and acting, and eventually landed the role of Murphy Brown, a feisty, single mom, television news anchor. At the Simmons School of Management Leadership Conference held in Boston over the weekend, Candace Bergen talked about the challenges of growing older and the importance of having good role models. This excerpt begins with Bergen discussing her first day on the set of the film Miss Congeniality, where she was surrounded by beautiful actresses half her age.
My first day in the makeup trailer, along with women in their teens and 20s who were all chosen for their youth looks and believability as beauty queens, who were all chattering nonstop during hair and makeup as I huddled paranoidly in a mirror, a magnifying mirror, wondering how to hide my waddle when it was 105 in Austin and there was no possibility to wear a turtleneck. So, okay, it's hard growing old, older, old. I keep a pair of glasses in every room in case I can't find the ones that are on the top of my head. And I take about 14 pills a day, some vitamins, some who knows. A lot of my conversations with women have the letters HRT. It's tough knowing that next year, the baby who I used to clutch in my arms because I knew in 18 years she would be going to college will actually in a year be going to college, and that it's going to take a tremendous effort plus the odd sedative to let her go. But I will, because that's part of the deal. And it's hard to watch my mother, who is now 80, an elegant, sophisticated, graceful woman, and to see her struggle with the infirmities that life has heaped upon her. Earlier this year, we gave her an 80th birthday party, and all of her closest lifelong friends, those remaining, came, and it was very poignant to watch them, looking around and wondering which of them would be around next year to celebrate again. So here I am watching the two women who are the closest and dearest to me about to leave, one to begin her own independent journey, the other to, hopefully, in the far distant future, to travel to parts unknown. But both these women are leading the way, teaching me in their own fashion how to let go and still keep hold of what you love. If there's anything I've learned over the years, it's that extraordinary women, extraordinary people are all around you. You may be surprised not only what you learn, but who you can learn it from. Look around at the people you see every day and really listen to them. The person you pass on the street, the coworker you've nodded to for years, and even the person you see in the mirror each morning, whether it's magnifying or not. They all have something valuable and rich to teach you if you'll only let them. Let them.
Actress Candace Bergen speaking at the Simmons School of Management Leadership Conference on Saturday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is WB.